okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. Just met Weber on the board. Wild weekend. Do we have Mr. Frank with us?
Yes, we do.
Good to see you. How are you? How was your weekend?
The weekend was amazing. Happy Dingus Day, by the way.
Yeah. Europe's closed.
Growing up in South Bend, it was a constant.
Well, only one time a year.
Yeah, but it's a constant. It happened every year.
True.
Monday after Easter. When I was younger, I went to the church rather than the West Side Democratic Club.
That doesn't surprise me. We had the Dow up 230, we had the S&P up 21, we got the NASDAQ up 47. This is after the huge jobs report on Friday. We're going to have a special Carl edition today. He's going to be on with Jan Flanagan from 7 to 7.30 today talking about the job numbers. So we couldn't keep Carl out of a number that big, even though we didn't have a show on Friday and the markets were mostly closed, although the Board of Trade opened for a little while just because of the job numbers. A lot of sports, Manny. A lot of sports, Frank. A lot of crazy stuff.
Boy, an awful lot.
I felt so good about this kid on the Sox getting 8 hits the first time. In how many years? 120 years? That's never happened? That's a long time.
8 for 8 in his first 8 at-bats.
Well, a 5 for 5 was the first. Nobody's ever done that.
Right, but it's amazing.
Yeah, and he seems like the most likable guy. And it took him 8 years to get here? He's been
forever, 11 maybe?
Yeah, maybe it was like 11.
17.
Yeah, he's
20 grand.
28 years old out of the Dominican Republic. Yermín Mercedes.
Boy, oh boy. I got to believe there were some down years in there. He's not really a fielder, right? He's just a DH? Just a DH.
Well, he's listed as backup catcher.
Okay. Well, he looks like he'd be a catcher. Just saying.
He hit every level he ever played at.
Really? Okay.
For average, yes.
Well, he looked like he meets the ball, but he has some power. He had a home run. But just, to see something like good like that happen in today's world is just nice, I think. I mean, the interview, he's like, I'm just so happy. I'm just going to sit here and I can enjoy it. I'm like, okay, you deserve that. So it's kind of fun. What is Sox all of a sudden have an elite announcing corps. They get sort of everything, Manny.
Yeah, they're on TV, which helps. Unlike the Cubs, unless you have RCN or Xfinity, you don't get the Cubs.
Yeah, what is the story with that?
They were on Hulu for the inaugural season of the Marquee Network as the only streaming service that carried Marquee Network. So you either had to have regular cable, but if you were a cord cutter like millions of people are, you could get the Cubs on Hulu. Well, after the first season, Hulu dropped Marquee and said, we're not paying for this, and dropped it. And everyone was waiting for someone else to pick it up, whether it be YouTube TV or Fubo TV, or maybe they work out a new deal with Hulu, and it hasn't happened. And now the season is 3 games old, and if you don't have cable, you can't watch the Cubs.
Are they on Dish and DirecTV?
That I don't know. I assume they are, yeah. I assume they are.
And if you're really technically adept, you can find the game.
If you're willing to, do an illegal stream. Not that I know anyone that would do that, Thomas. But yeah. you can always find a way.
Well, who streams it illegally? I mean, Major League Baseball does. You can't even listen to the radio. If you go to the WGM, show my age. If you go to the Score,
maybe you can't, Tom.
I'm saying if you go to the Score site, it's not even on the site. There's no.
No, it's all blacked out. But if you. There's always ways where you can find these, sketchy websites where you can find a live stream of something if you look hard enough.
Right, my question then is, where do they get it from?
Well, they're hacking into somehow, they found a way to use whatever service they have, whether it's cable or something, to put it on the internet.
Okay.
And then they stream it out to everyone else and put up their sketchy ads all over it.
Okay.
This is another example of the Ricketts mismanagement.
Well, there's going to be a whole generation of young people that are growing up in a house that is a cord-cutting house, which is probably more than half of the households now, that have just are never going to see the Cubs, and they're only going to see the White Sox. And this will reverse the popularity just like it did the other way back in the 70s.
Yeah, what my question is to you guys, it's not whether these policies are right, wrong, or in the barrel. I mean, it's not up for me to say or really for anybody to say, but the people who make the policies, do they have any concept of history of what put the Cubs on the planet in the first place?
Seemingly not.
I don't think so. In my youth and in the 70s, we used to make fun of anybody that was a Cubs fan.
Well, that's a South Side thing.
No, I was in South Bend and an Indians fan. No, I lived near Wrigley Field in 1980, and I paid for one ticket that year. I would fill up a bag with three empty beer containers and get a free ticket for the next game.
Really?
That's how bad it was in 1980.
Well,
fill a bag with trash, you got a ticket. And there weren't enough people going to the game to fill a bag with trash. Well,
baseball was very popular, but that's part of history that people don't. I mean, you look at the teams in New York, when they had Duke Snider, Mickey Mantle, and Willie Mays playing center field. They had three teams in New York. You had the Dodgers, you had the Giants, and you had the Yankees. Baseball was incredibly popular. It was on every radio around. But people worked all day. They didn't go to the games. I mean, it wasn't like you had corporate sponsors and corporate stuff. I mean, if the Cubs drew a million people, well, they always broke into the million people number, which was a big year. And now they're what, three? But you went to the Cubs were on and the Sox were on. I come home from school and I catch the last few innings of either one. Because Brickhouse did both of them, and they were both on Channel 9. You know, Channel 9 was an incredible pioneer in the game. The first, who had the first televised game? Guys, you should know this. Was it Cincinnati? Or was it the Cubs? Or the first Cincinnati had the first game with lights, I know. But I think it might have been the Cubs had the first televised game. And Channel 9 was the absolute pioneer in the cameras in those days. Every couple of years they get new cameras. And all they do for his Brickhouse would just be, gushing about the new camera. And they finally got a camera where you could, read somebody's scorecard. And he's like, you believe this is unbelievable, which is, at the time was unreal. But then I'm going to say we had just moved down somewhere in what, the early 80s?
The first televised game was August 26, 1939. And it was on W2XBS, which became known as WNBC-TV, between the Cincinnati Reds and the Brooklyn Dodgers at Ebbets Field in Brooklyn.
I thought it was Cincinnati was involved, because they also were the first game with lights, right? That was at their place, though, Crosley Field.
I'd have to look on lights. But 1939, first TV game.
And the Cubs were what, 48 when they started?
WGN was, 47, 48, right? So 10 years later.
Yeah. And so the Cubs, they ran, all the home games ran, none of the road games ran. And the Cubs did a few road games. But in those days, I think you had to, they didn't have any satellites. So as I recall, Manny, and I'm no engineer, I'm into your game, I think they sent the, I don't know if it was in color, if they had enough bandwidth, but it came from wherever you were to Chicago over telephone lines, didn't it?
Yep.
By the way, the first night game, you're right, was at Crosley Field in Cincinnati. May 24th, 1935, so 4 years before the first game was on TV, there was a night game. And that was also involving the Reds, except this time in Cincinnati, and it was Reds-Phillies. And the game was at 8:30 p.m., and Franklin D. Roosevelt threw out the first pitch.
Really?
But he threw it out at the White House in Washington, and the lights went on in Cincinnati.
Yeah, I don't think he'd have brought the wheelchair out to the middle of the field.
No. But he threw out the first pitch in the White House lawn. And yeah. Then they flicked the lights on in Cincinnati.
So then the Cubs decided they were going to be all Cubs. They're going to put every game on. Before that, it was, the Continental Network, where they'd do a Sunday game nationwide. And the reason why the Cubs became America's team is if you're drinking at a bar in Oklahoma the 20 afternoon, you're watching the Cup game on a Tuesday. There's no doubt. I mean, it was the only sporting event then. They got massive amounts of fans because of that, right? And now another, and the Sox decided to go on cable. They were on Channel 44, and then Channel 44 became, was it on TV or something? You had to pay for it? Then Eddie Einhorn decided to cut, the Sox would be on cable. The only problem was he went on cable 10 years before the city was wired, right, Frank? So the only fans the Sox had were the lunatics that lived in Bridgeport at the time and people in the suburbs. That was the Sox fandom. Nobody in the city was a Sox fan because you couldn't watch them. And now they're going exactly the opposite direction, the Cubs, and they still think they're America's team. But I don't think they are anymore. Do you? Well, Atlanta was for a while.
It's management.
But Atlanta was second at. They were, for a while you could watch Atlanta every time. And they're not a nationwide anymore, are they, Manny? The Turner broadcast system gave up on them?
That's right, yeah.
Speaking of Atlanta, we'll be talking all kinds of other stuff in a bit, but what do you make of them moving the All-Star game?
MLB?
Businesses can make their own decision. You know, they call it virtue signaling or canceling, but the president and the governor are calling, the ex-president and the governor are calling for boycotting of Delta, Coca-Cola, and other companies, which is virtue signaling and canceling for their backers. So, hey, they're playing a game.
I'm not so sure what I feel about all this. I just,
why did we need a 98-page? What problem does that 98-page law resolve? We'll start there.
I read about half of it, which I can't believe I did, but I did. And
I read the whole thing. It solves no problem. I mean, it creates some.
Well,
the problem was created by the Georgia State Legislature and Republican Party. They went to their catering to the people that said there were major fraud and
well, since I'm in the middle, Frank, I'm going to try and put a shot on this.
A person in the middle can make a decision, Tom. It doesn't mean you get to say I'm in the middle.
I read the thing, and here's my problem with it: is I had no idea what I was comparing it against. So it's exactly as Maddie and I have talked about on the air for 10 years. I have an article in here somewhere. Someday I'll actually find it. I can read it and prove that I'm right, that I have an article, not that the article is right. It has to do with people who don't have the time or inclination to read stuff themselves, so they just line up with whatever side they think they're at. So if you're a right-winger, you think this thing's a terrific law. If you're a left-winger, you think it's awful. And
well, let's go back about why we needed a law. Was there massive fraud in Georgia?
How do you know? I don't know.
Pardon me?
How do you know? I don't know.
You don't know? Then you aren't reading either.
Everything I read is
I mean, the governor came out before and said there was massive fraud. Now that it's been passed, and he signed it with 10 white guys standing around him.
Well, I'll tell you what.
Old white guys. He says they did it because of massive fraud.
There's no
example of massive fraud.
I'm an old white guy.
How has it not been found by anybody?
I'm not an old white guy. Look, Frank, there's no question in my mind that the rush to not going to the polling place, and I understand that some states have made it, and I'm not pushing one side or the other, because I know in some states they made it very difficult to get to the polling place and use COVID as an excuse and all those kinds of things. I mean, I get it that both sides are trying to be as nefarious as they possibly can, like they always are, right? But the idea that somewhere along the line, with this whole new opening up of God knows what, where nobody can go to the polls anymore, even if it's 40 feet away, that there needs to be some sort of a nationwide program as who the hell gets to vote and how and why. And I don't...
There's no question about it. But I'm asking, just, we'll go back, you're talking about Georgia specifically.
Yeah.
What problem did it resolve?
And what I said...
Did?
What I said was it's the first time
you don't know. It's obvious
that there wasn't. That's what I just said. I read the thing.
I'm sorry.
I read the thing, and what I said was, unless I had a list of the other 49 states and what it was before versus now, I can't figure out. I mean, when they go from, you know, whatever, 10 days before the election, you can submit the stuff to 8 days. I don't know if every other state's 6 days, 4 days. I don't know how, I have no idea how restrictive it is. It's all new to me. I'm saying if people forgot if they were on the left or the right and just read the damn thing, they'd probably be as confused as me. I don't know if this is a good idea or not. I mean, I have
no idea. Georgia state legislature now can fire any county or state official, election official, and replace them with the person of their choice. Okay, fine. We'll put in Rudy Giuliani. And they would have found 11,870 votes if that had been.
Well, in some states, I'm reading the part about in order to decide that it's you that sent the ballot in and not just some idiot, or some idiot with an agenda, that you put all your personal information essentially on the envelope, and then when you fold the envelope over, it's allegedly sealed. It's not like nobody could open the damn thing. And then when you get to the polls, in some places, they separate the envelope from the ballot so nobody can tell who voted what, okay? So then, a month later, when they have a problem and they try and figure out who the hell voted, they can't figure it out because they throw out the envelopes. Well, that's stone-cold idiotic, Frank. You can't tell me that somebody can't show up with 5,000 ballots the last day, stuff them in, and say, where do these come from? We don't know. And not like the Democrats wouldn't do that, and not like the Republicans wouldn't close a polling place in the middle of a Democratic area. They're both idiots, right? That's why there needs
to... But, Tom, things have changed dramatically since we were kids, or even our young adult years.
Yeah, you don't even have to...
much cleaner.
You don't even have to drag somebody out of the riverbank to vote in the polling place. You can just send a letter in with his name on it. That's what's changed.
There's states that double check that to make sure it doesn't happen.
That's my point. Some do, some don't.
Tom, do you realize how few people were dead and sent in votes? People have done this statistically right now. This is a problem.
I know that if
it doesn't need legislation.
I know that if somebody,
maybe to make it easier for people to vote.
Let's put it this way: I know that in an election where somebody wins by 5%, it's always negligible. But I also know in the Florida case with Bush and Gore, it was so close it wasn't negligible. And you compound that with an electoral system where it's a winner take all, it's insane. If in Florida they would have given both of those guys half the electorates, it wouldn't have been a problem. But the way we stack one problem on top of another, it can be a problem, is all I'm saying.
Now who's going to change that rule?
It appears... The idea
of a constitutional, and I guess it'd probably have to be an amendment. No, I have no idea.
Well, the idea that states make the rules for the federal election, to me, is a problem right out of the get-go. Right, and that the states, I mean, this whole idea of states' rights, that the states can gerrymander districts, and nobody can tell me that the Republicans and Democrats, one's worse than the other. Illinois is horrible.
No, they aren't. But if we're going to given that they're gerrymandered, at least it should be easy to vote for everybody.
What do you mean by easy?
You should be able to vote by mail or vote by computer. They've been doing it for years in Oregon.
Okay, and who the hell wants to live in Oregon?
Washington with no problem at all.
Who wants to live in Oregon?
The system would work here.
It wouldn't work here because Illinois is crooked.
Or it would work in Georgia.
Hey, all I'm saying is that it's always some effort by somebody because it one follows from the other, all right? And if you're, whatever you are, somebody will wander out from somewhere, and usually it's somebody, you know, some community activist guy, and he's going to say, we're going to go and register, you know, 40,000 people for this election. And you're going, wait a minute, how many 40,000 people? Why aren't they registered
by now?
Because
it's too damn hard to register.
How do you know? Why is it that hard?
I know, because every Republican in the country is against motor voter. You realize how hard it is to get a driver's license and a real ID, yet they don't want people to be able to register to vote?
In most states, you don't need an ID. You don't need an ID, you don't want
to register, you do.
I don't know, it's been so long since I registered.
Why don't we have motor voter? That makes it easier for people with required IDs. Need it, the same IDs you need for a passport. But most Republican states have voted it down.
I
legislature. Why?
I'm all for what I'm saying. Frank, is the impression.
Are you for that, Tom?
Yes, the impression people...
Get a driver's license, prove who you are, prove where you live.
The impression... A lot of people...
Would you allow them to register?
Yeah,
to vote?
A lot of people that are...
Okay.
Well, Frank, the point is that everybody, you get the impression, all right, whenever it is these voter drives, that somehow or another, people are beating the bushes, they're dragging people out that either have no interest or never shown any interest, and all of a sudden they're going to show up. And everybody has this idea that everybody thinks their vote should count for more than somebody else's. Everybody does. Because they're more...
No.
Well, to a certain
everybody?
Extent. To a certain extent.
No, everybody thinks that maybe white votes... I hear people talking about literacy tests again. We're talking Republicans. I hear people talking about property ownership and the right to vote, or a vote counting more. No.
It comes down to...
And you can't say community activist because that really limits it to one group.
No, it doesn't.
In the country.
No, it doesn't.
And that's a descriptor that's not talked about, you know, you could say the Republican Party calls and gets people. You said it's usually community activists.
The community activists could be in Appalachia. They're all white.
You should be wrong there, too.
Well, right. I mean, but my point is everybody has, I don't care who you are, even you, allegedly this, you know, you're the soulful liberal. The fact is, if you study some of the stuff, I'm not talking about being a homeowner and those kinds of things, I'm going down that road, and you see somehow some old bus pulling out of the mountains in West Virginia and some people pouring out of the bus that have never voted in life, and all of a sudden 50 people walk in and cast a ballot, and you're sitting there going, really? That counts as much as mine?
Yeah, but you know what, Frank would think? That's wonderful that people are letting people and exercising their right to vote.
Okay, why did you have to go recruit them? Why did you have to pay them, probably, if they actually cared about it?
Okay, Tom, we'll talk about Chicago. There's public,
like I said, yeah,
transportation deserts where it's impossible to register. I'm sure the same thing happens with white Appalachian folks living in dollars or whatever.
I don't know what it's like now in some of these areas that have been essentially burned out in Chicago. But what's the furthest anybody has to walk to get to a precinct? I mean, back in the day. I don't know about now.
You can't vote. You can't register at a precinct. And now they have same day registration.
No, my point is,
what's the farthest people have to vote to go to or travel to get to a driver services facility and get a state ID card? That's a stupid idea.
To have what? A state ID card?
There's states where you don't have to show ID to get a gun.
Okay.
I mean, so let's talk about problems. I mean, how many people died because of poor voting records?
I don't have
process.
Frank, I'm all for everybody getting a chance to vote, to being some idea being part of, I want everybody to be part of the system. I mean, you know that. But the idea of somebody...
Well, then you should be against the Georgia law.
Okay.
Read all 98 pages in the analysis of it.
I'm not sure that...
It's stomach churning.
I'm not sure that at some point that this whole... I think that when Illinois went from counting the absentee ballots in the precinct to counting them at the county building, it was a problem. There's no discipline on that. There wasn't the same... is having the people at the precinct get the absentee ballots of, you know, the people who are overseas, the people in the Army, the people who are on vacation, looking at it, comparing the signatures, and putting the votes through. Why is that? I'm saying that there's a certain discipline to the old system, and when you decide to throw it out the window with no other discipline in a new system based on what you can get away with in the state, whether
in Chicago, it's easier to... If you do the counting at the ward or precinct level, it's easier to manipulate it.
Right.
Now that we have electronic, it's harder to manipulate.
I don't know about that. We have electronic trading now. Is it cleaner than in our day or no?
No, because they don't regulate cleanliness. They don't care.
Yeah, just because electronic...
We were self-policing, so there's no policeman. This is a situation now in trading where the outlaws run the game.
Well, that's all right. While we have you here, let's talk about the market for 1 minute. You got like 2 minutes. What did you make of that labor report Friday before we have Carl on earlier? It's I got all kinds of people. I'm looking at the household survey now, and the household survey, does not even begin to, wow. Household survey's up to
915,000, was that the number?
That's the establishment survey. That's the establishment survey. The household survey is 800,000. But get a look at this. We picked up
8.95 million people. More people are unemployed now than they were when the pandemic started. That's all I'm going to say.
Not really.
So we got to look at both numbers.
What do you mean by unemployed?
Pardon me?
What do you mean by unemployed?
It was the report that was part of the report. I'll have to go back and look at it.
Officially unemployed, we've got 2.6 million more unemployed. We got 3.5 million.
That's registered and looking for a job.
Yeah, we got 3.5 million in the we don't know what they're doing column. The people.
Hey, if you've been cut off unemployment benefits and you're still unemployed, you aren't counted is unemployed.
That's exactly
unemployment benefits ran for a year.
People
that filed in March of last year aren't counted as anything, or February.
Well, if you look at March of last year, we had 155 million people that were employed, and now we got 150. So we're down 5.
How many people were employed in February?
We can't get those numbers. It only goes back a year, and then you got to go back to...
Oh, yeah, that's right, because they're screwing with the numbers now. Now, there's something that I have problems with both parties are.
Oh, yeah.
You and I are both in the middle on that. Give us the effing numbers.
Why? We might read them. We might have somebody who reads them. We don't want that.
Even if it's just you and me.
Carl's reading them. I bet Carl has the February numbers. Well, March was... The March numbers were 155. That had to be the top. 155 at the end of March last year.
St. Patrick's Day really didn't happen in a lot of the country, so I'd say March numbers.
See, I think these
were
guys
impacted by the last 2 weeks.
I think these
of
guys
March.
Used to give you the monthlies of the whole last year. Now they don't. They only go back a year on the monthlies.
Oh, that's I know.
I'm sure Carl has them somewhere. All right, Frank, at you.
Well, I'll listen for Carl on that number.
Talk at you on Thursday, bud. Have a good one. SP Futures up 22.
Yeah, but the market should be higher. We broke through 4,000 on the S&P 500.
Nominally or real? Is this nominal or real? You going to get those terms out of the dictionary?
Yeah, is it real? Yeah. Throw in inflation? It's real. What it's trading at.
Can we keep stagflation in the ancient history, or are we going to pull that one?
I don't think so, but I don't know if the market's going to go down. It's going to reflect it.
Never went down in the Weimar Republic, but the Weimar Republic went down. SP Futures up 23, NASDAQ Futures up 55. Talk to you on Thursday. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Werber, we have Mr. Jeff Flanning. I just heard here your buddy Bo Wrigley, Matty. You know who he is? Chicago gum billionaire William Bo Wrigley.
Okay.
Returns to Chicago business roots. The guy's buying six Windy City cannabis dispensaries.
Yeah, I saw that on WGN the other night.
What?
I guess they already own like 100 across the country or something.
So at the end of the day here, and this is everybody knows what this does to me on a Monday morning when I'm supposed to be being nice today. The idea we're going to have, I'll bet at the end of this year we'll have two or three owners of all the dispensaries. But all the BS of not having enough going to minorities, not having enough of this, anything. At the end of the day, there's going to be two or three owners, and the state can't wait to have two or three owners. I don't know if they're stuffing their pockets or what they're doing. The idea of all of these being independent, they want no part of it. I mean, somebody explain to me how that's all happening. It happens all the time. I don't get it. But anyway, SP Futures up 23, Nasdaq Futures up 59.
You don't have to sell.
You're always worth more to somebody else in the business than you are to somebody else.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, the price is always going to be high for a guy who can become a monopolist. Because the monopoly price is higher, correct? Than a competitive price. That's why it should be.
I guess so, yeah.
Dow Futures up 227 over in Europe. We've got the DAX up 98.6%, FTSE up 23.3%, CAC run up 35.6%. Over in Asia, wait a minute. Belay that. No, those guys are all closing. These were Friday numbers. Of course, we didn't have Friday numbers, so it's, that's what happened there on Friday, Thursday, which we didn't get a chance to report, but they're closed Friday, they're closed today in Europe. Now in Asia, the only place that's open is Shanghai and Hang Seng. The Nikkei is closed. Shanghai is up 18 points. It's 0.5%. Hang Seng up 560. That's a full 2%. Actually, that was a Friday number, too. So the one that we were looking at, none of these guys are open. So the only people are open are us, Mitty. Wait a minute. The Nikkei is open. Why can't they all be either closed or open? Is there something wrong with this? Okay, so the Nikkei is open. They're the only ones that's open, and us. Is that confusing enough, Mitty, pretty much?
Not anymore.
Anymore, yeah. A 10-year up 1.73. The Bund minus 0.32. The Japan positive 0.11. Oil is down 111, 60.34. Brent down 118, 63.68. Natural gas down 7 cents, 256. RBOB down 3 cents to 198. We've got gold down a buck, 17.27, and a nice rally on Thursday. Silver up, call it a penny to 24.95. Not much going on in the metals markets. Copper is at 410, however, up 11 cents. That's back to being near its old high. And we've got crypto is down 228 at 57,684. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports? God, was that a game Saturday night? The first game, GURPS game, not much. But
first game, yeah, the tournament I thought itself has been pretty awful. And then we were graced with that game on Saturday night, which was fantastic between Gonzaga and UCLA. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, Chief. Absolutely no delays to speak of at this hour, so enjoy a nice, quiet Monday morning commute if you're heading into downtown this morning. Weather today, we'll have some rain today with a high of 73, so mild temperatures but rain in the forecast. Right now it is mostly cloudy and 62 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a hot one today, partly cloudy skies with a high of 96. Right now it's clear and 65. In sports, Major League Baseball is now in full swing with a big weekend of games. The Cubs won yesterday, beating the Pirates for the second straight day. 4-3 was the final in that one. Zach Davies earned his first win as a Cub. Cubs are now 2-1 on the young season. White Sox dropped 3 of 4. From the Angels, losing last night 7-4. They rallied back to tie that game at 4 apiece before surrendering 3 late runs and dropping to Joe Maddon and the Angels by three. So our first look at the Monday morning Major League Baseball standings. The Cubs are tied for first place in the NL Central at 2-1 with the Reds, while the White Sox are in last place in the AL Central at 1-3, and they're 1.5 games behind first place Detroit, Kansas City, and Minnesota, who are all at 2-1. Obviously, very, very early after just one series. Lastly, the Diamondbacks were in action, and they beat the Padres 3-1, salvaging the final game of their three-game series, opening up with San Diego.
He's listening to your buddy Ozzy after the game. It is very bad baseball. They can't catch the ball.
Well, they gave up, what, like four earned runs in the first couple of games or something like four unearned runs in the first couple of games?
I love Ozzy.
He is very honest. Bulls got their first win in a while, beating the Nets last night, 115-107. Blackhawks were off. They're off again tonight, back in action on Tuesday against Dallas. Coyotes beat the Ducks 3-2. And the national championship game is tonight after that spectacular late Saturday night game, as we just mentioned, between Gonzaga and UCLA. It'll be the number one overall seed, Zags, versus the second number one overall seed, Baylor. These are the top two seeds in the tournament. First time that's happened, that they'll meet in the national championship game, I think, since Illinois-North Carolina back in 2005. So very rare that the top two seeds survive the tournament and make it, but here we are. These have been the two best teams all year, and they'll tip off tonight at 8:20 p.m. Chicago time. Gonzaga is a 4.5-point favorite with the over-under line at 159.5. So they're expecting a lot of scoring and a relatively close game with the Zags as a slight favorite. Chief?
I was kind of stunned. I mean, I'm not that huge of a fan. But when's the last time somebody was undefeated all the way to the end? I don't know what year I would have picked, but I sure as hell wouldn't have gone all the way back to 1976.
Well, yeah, 76 Indiana's the last undefeated team, and I knew that off the top of my head. That's just kind of a legendary thing.
That's because you know more about me. Yeah.
Well, that's just a legendary thing in college basketball. It's the last time that's happened. And
used to happen all the time at UCLA.
Yeah, and so it's been, you know, 50 years since it's happened, and it could happen tonight with Gonzaga. And I think if Baylor didn't have their COVID pause, I think they would be undefeated right now too. But they lost a couple games when they came out of that COVID pause, and they weren't the same, and now they look like old Baylor again, and so they're very scary. But yeah, I remember UNLV in 90 was undefeated at 90 or 91, and then they lost to Duke in the title game. Wichita State was undefeated about 5 years ago, and then they lost in the tournament. Kentucky was undefeated a couple years ago, and then they lost in the Final Four to Wisconsin. And I think that was it for the undefeated teams this late in the season since 1976.
Didn't they?
Very rarely happens.
When UCLA played, who did Elvin Hayes go for? Where did he play for? They were both undefeated. Was that in the tournament, though, or was that before the tournament they had that epic game?
Elvin Hayes played at University of Houston.
They played UCLA. Was that in the tournament where they both were undefeated?
I don't know. I'd have to.
I think Elvin Hayes beat Jabbar.
Not sure.
And then I think they lost the tournament, I think, something like that. John, how are you?
Tom, I'm good. How about you?
I don't know. The news has got me being tossed from place to place. I honestly don't know. This Atlanta thing, it bothers me on one level because I can't figure out how to compare it to other states, so I don't know how bad it is or good it is or whatever side you're on. And I challenge anybody to read the thing and tell me whether it's fair or not. It seems like it's more restrictive than it was. I don't know how restrictive that makes it compared to other places. So, I mean, I'm kind of lost on the thing, and yet it obviously is creating a national fervor. I'm not at all happy with the fact that Coca-Cola makes this huge announcement, and because it's a court of public opinion, everybody starts piling onto the people that are the head of these companies. Corporate CEOs should be making these decisions. Who exactly declared these guys as our noblemen? Are we going to have a House of Nobles with another group of Congress where they get to go there?
Yeah,
who makes these guys anything?
I don't want them to be my moral compass.
No, I mean, it's out of all the people in the world, I'd say those might be the last I want to be to my moral compass. What gives those guys any, other than getting in the right spot and stealing a lot of money? I mean, there are some people I know are very well deserved, and other people, this whole management class thing that are. Probably our most liberal guy, worse than Frank. I would say worse than Frank, more liberal than Frank, is our friend Eric May, who's soon to be back on since he got his vaccines and so forth. But he's like this management class that now runs all these places and makes all this money. They're not owners. They didn't invent the place. They didn't start the place. Who the hell are they? And, you know, Now we're going to make them our moral compass on top of it. I want Zuckerberg telling me whether I should knock over an old lady or not. Come on, Jeff. He wouldn't exactly be the guy to ask. Not today. He's already.
I guess maybe at one level it isn't surprising that you've got these mega corporations using people's concern about social justice issues as marketing tools. So
yes.
There's a whole Kaepernick flap that's ongoing and stuff like that, where they use this as a way of pitching their products or their image to a particular group of people, and of course in doing that, they, whether they care or not, they insult another portion of the population, and which they seem to be dismissive of and don't care how they respond. So they turn this, just a product becomes some kind of statement of your political allegiances, and I don't understand where there's a benefit in mingling these two this way.
Well, there obviously is a benefit, or they think there's a benefit. But I have a serious question that is self-deprecating here. I admit to, when I was young, I would admit to be what they call square. Is that the word? Is that what they used to call people like me?
Badge of honor.
Yeah, well, it's whatever. Can anybody explain to me exactly what the attraction is to this friggin' Coke commercial that I've watched now 1,000 times watching these games with the weird looking chick? Is she supposed to be like a zombie or something? And the guy who's like a half centaur. And why does Coke think that they can market cherry vanilla cola? Who the hell are they marketing that to? Talk about either they don't know, it's either some sort of an ethnic thing. Out of all the things that they're selling, their worst sellers got to be the high sugar drinks, and yet there hasn't been a commercial for regular Coke, for Diet Coke, for anything. That's the only Coke commercial I think I've seen. It might have been another one, but what is the appeal there? Who are those two people supposed to appeal to? Or is it?
I can't help you there. I don't get it either.
Manny, do you have any idea? Is there some sort of a movie out where people, the guys are centaurs and women look like that? Is it something? There's got to be something. What marketing?
If there were, I haven't seen it. But for a while, I've shaken my head at a lot of the ad campaigns that I pay any attention to, because I don't know who their target group is. I don't know where this ad writing came from, in what imaginative corner they've gone for this material. It must be a generational thing where they don't communicate anything to me but befuddlement. I have no idea what I'm looking at or what I'm supposed to do with it or how it translates to any emotional appeal or anything else. It's just there's a weirdness to it that I find threatening in a way, because they must think and have evidence that it does work somehow for whatever they're trying to do. But exactly what are they trying to do?
Manny, who would you say they're trying to appeal to in their Coke commercial?
The people that are least vigilant about what they ingest, and they find the worst possible product, and this is the target audience, and they have to convince them that there's something attractive about this, or they just had a misfire. But I doubt if it's a misfire.
Believe
me, I have no idea what to make of it at all.
I get the commercial.
Help me out, man. Please.
It's not. I've seen it so many times. It couldn't be more annoying. But I get it. I mean, it's saying, if you've ever looked for, sort of a weird combination of things, there's other people out there looking for it too, and here's a weird combination of things, and it just so happens that girl's like half werewolf or something, and that guy's like half centaur, and then now they found their perfect Coca-Cola product that's half and half of two weird things.
And their mate, it appears.
Right. And so there you go. I don't get it. I don't understand the timing of it. It would make sense if it was around Halloween or something, but, I definitely don't. It doesn't appeal to me. I found the commercial to be kind of annoying, but I do get it.
Well, do you think? I know these things cost an awful lot of money. If you're a shareholder, if you're sitting on the board, you're going to get this relentless drivel from your marketing people. But is there some sort of the world's best commercials? And by the way, I happen to think the AT&T girl is clever, and I think she's very attractive. For God's sake. In the last 3 weeks, have I seen her 4,000 times or what? In the same commercial? I've seen Jake. I think Jake from State Farm is one of the better commercial actors I've ever seen. Yet I'm really tired of the guy. When you come up with a new commercial, Manny, is there a lifespan to the commercial? We can show this 100 times, 1,000 times. It can't be 100,000. What's the number? I mean, we're talking about these basketball games. Literally, are two games. I know they're supposedly sanitizing the place and whatever. But what was Saturday night? They started at, what time did they start? 4 o'clock, and it was over at 11 or 10? I mean, for God's sake. You know, they gotta, I mean, I understand part of it is they're, you know, they're getting people out, moving people in them. But how many commercials? I mean, I like the people that are analyzing the game, Chuck and those other guys. God, I'm so tired of them. I mean, how long can you listen to the same four people over 4 weeks saying the same stuff? I mean, do they think there's any burnout on this, or is it just me being old and grumpy? Anybody? I mean, I guess it's just me then. All right. I mean, it just seems like how do you go into a 4 week span being a major sponsor and have only two commercials that you play over and over and over again? I mean, how is that good business? I mean, I don't quite get it. So, John, we have the numbers that came out Friday show the economy is picking up. Now, Carl's going to give us a full assessment here about what part of the wage group there are, and a lot of it, I think a lot of it was in service and hospitality. Maddie, is your bro seeing any of that? Are people being called back to work in those areas? I don't think anybody's getting called back at like McCormick Place or anything like that. Are any big hotels reopening downtown, John? Are you here? I mean, Conrad Hill is still closed.
I don't think they've reopened yet. Or their, you know, their attendant facilities, the restaurants and shops and stuff. I don't think so.
I didn't know anything was closed. I know that,
Palmer House been closed. I think Cameron Hilton's been closed.
Really? Okay, yeah. I didn't know that the hotels were closed. I thought everything had been reopened since June or July. I know that they're not operating at full capacity because not everyone's traveling, obviously, but, I didn't know they were closed.
I thought we looked,
when I checked, this is like 2 or 3 weeks ago. If you go to their websites and you want to book a room, there's a notice that says we're currently closed. We will be accepting reservations. I think it was like May 20th or something for both the Hilton and the Palmer House. And I didn't check, I didn't see anything like that on any of the Hyatt sites. I think they're open or reduced capacity, but they are accepting reservations.
I think the ones north, maybe the Hyatt and the Marriott on either side of the river, I think they're open.
Yeah.
But the ones by McCormick Place got to be closed. But who's there?
Yeah, there's nothing going on.
Is there a date where there's a first convention that's coming in? I know the Housewares punted again, right?
Right.
But is there?
I haven't heard about any big shows that are on track. So,
what about in Florida? Are they open in Florida or not? The conventions?
Oh, I think so. There's another problem for us.
Well, Manny, you guys used to go to those things. Is there anyone you guys are planning to do?
No, not until the fall, as is the latest I've heard. All of the spring shows that we would normally have in the April timeframe are either going to be virtual or they've been pushed back. I am seeing that the Houseware show is still scheduled for April 11th through 15th, 2021. Which would be next week. So I don't know if that has that been delayed.
No, you know, it might have been the restaurant show.
Is this an outdated?
It might have been the restaurant show to get kicked.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is. I just pulled up a website. Now this is in Las Vegas, not the Chicago one.
Okay.
I'll have to find what the Chicago one is, but the Las Vegas one looks like it is planning to happen next week.
Well, what's the? Could you guys even have a guess at a hotel the size of the Conrad Hilton? How many people you would need just to open the place on a small level? It's got to be hundreds, right? Maids and cooks,
yeah.
And I mean, it's got to be. What do you suppose the full employee load is that place when it's full? It's got to be 500 people.
Oh, and maybe probably more if you figure in, but just part-time staff and everything else too. So
I often wondered. I mean, I tried to make a guess of it. My stupid mental capacity where I try to think about stuff like this. What do you suppose that the full capacity of employees is in a place like the Mirage in Vegas, when you talk about dealers and cocktail waitresses and maids and cleaning people and cooks? And it's got to be 24/7 every week, every month. I can't even imagine how many people are actually work there. It's got to be, I think it's, what do you think it is, 2,000-3,000?
Yeah, I would bet in the thousands.
It's got to
be.
Well, John, the numbers on Friday surprise you? They don't really match up with the household numbers, but establishment numbers were pretty high. They were 9-something. And clearly, things are opening up some. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, what is the deal at Wrigley, Maddie? Can you get a hot dog? Can you get a beer? Or what's the... I mean, it looked like people were working there. I mean, there's some people in the place. Are there, what, 10,000 people? Is there max?
The guy who cut my hair 25%. On Saturday had been to a game, and he said they'll bring you your food and beer to you, so you don't have to stand in line. So they must have somebody running around like Grubhub doing the delivery.
I saw some guy running around with, like, it looked like a laptop, and he was taking somebody's order.
Yeah.
Now, was Lori watching the game for all the people? And with this high def, you know, your mask on, they can tell who you are. Now, is she sending out tickets today or what?
No, she got booed on opening day.
Oh, yeah. Well,
they are selling concession, but it's cashless concessions.
Right.
So you have to pay with your mobile device.
Well, I can't pay. I don't know how to do that.
So they have an app that you have to download, and it says fans at Wrigley Field will use a mobile app to order concessions instead of ordering from a counter or a kiosk. Paying for concessions, they have touchless scanners and a QR code on their to pay through your phone, and you have to stand 6 feet apart in all lines.
You get on an airplane and all the middle seats now are all full. Delta was the last.
It looks like that's the only rule, and then it's all mobile tickets. But I think they've done that for a while now.
So I don't do that either. So I can't go, I guess. Just saying. Well, I guess it just makes me.
They put an extra hand sanitizer. These are the, I'm just reading all of the measurements that they put in.
Well, you know, our friend Kevin, there's actually a website.
And face coverings required.
Yeah, there's actually a website. Well, there were people that didn't have mine.
I'm sure. That's true. But, yeah, it says face. I don't know if it's just. I think when you're in your seat, you can eat and drink, obviously, and so you can flip it down. But when you're walking around the park, it has to be on.
Ah. Just like restaurants. All right. Well, it's. Well, do you sense, I mean, Jan, we're going to be digging this deeper with Carl, but where do you think, have you been hearing any rumors? What is the story with the places and the rent and the people that are, when's the official can't boot people out? Is that the end of June now with this new law? Both,
yeah.
Now, what does that mean exactly?
It's a hard date, but,
can you accumulate interest on that rent and those things, or what are the particulars? So if I'm living in some apartment, or now does that work for businesses too? That you can't evict
I
a business?
Think so, yeah.
All right, so I'm there for 5 months, and then all of a sudden I get a 5 month bill and I can't pay it. Well, then what? Takes you another year to get me out of there, or how does that work?
I think then you can have some kind of a workout, but it isn't like you're going to get it, suspended. Going to be paying something, and I mean, you may be digging a hole for yourself and trying to keep your head afloat. But that's the thing that there is no way of predicting how this really, we haven't seen how this is going to play out. So this may look like it's a good thing in the short term, but ultimately, I think you're just building huge amounts of debt. There's no way the landlords are going to let you skate on all this stuff. You're going to have to pay a pretty good chunk of it at some point.
Well, the signals.
I'm kind of concerned that isn't really. There's no way to kind of systematize that in a way that's fair or predictable for either side, without just huge concessions that have to be made somewhere along the line, and I just that doesn't help at all. It just adds to uncertainty. So.
Well, that's what concerns me. I mean, I talk about it in different ways. To me, it's the same subject, but it probably isn't obvious to other people, but. To me, this is another 2007. This is another Great Depression. This is a dramatic balance sheet hit to this society. This is not an income hit. This is a balance sheet hit for a lot of people. Where if you own a place or you rent, if something's down, that you all of a sudden had savings and now you don't, or you didn't have debt and now you do. It's a balance sheet hit to dramatic, and it's seemingly uneven as to where it lands. And every time I was, giving Frank known to grief about, reading the law in Atlanta, well, I tried reading the law on the employee, I don't know if I mentioned this last week, the Employee Retention Act. And it's getting to the point, John, maybe I just didn't used to read this stuff, and probably that's it. But I read this thing, and I was into it maybe two paragraphs, and I'm like, God, some restaurant guy wrote this thing, or his lobbyist wrote this. This is so skewed toward restaurants, it's scary. Where if you were considered partially shut down, there's no revenue test. Okay, before you get money from the government to pay for employees you kept on. Yet if you're a non-essential business, if you're an essential business, which is what PTI is, because we're, although originally it wasn't obvious that we were, all right, it didn't mean that we could, like, come downtown without sneaking downtown, that type of thing. If I didn't find the bridge by Harrison at a post office that was open, we couldn't have got down here. How else are we going to get here? I mean, every other bridge was closed, and by the way, the L's weren't running, right? So by definition, though, because we were able to service our clients, of course, we couldn't see one for a year, right, or anything like that. There's no way you could meet somebody new. But, yeah, did we service our people? Yes, we did. Now, even if we had one or two people here, those people worked harder and those kinds of things. But it took us a while to get, you know, everybody set up at home for if they were at home, if we couldn't get down here, those kinds of things. It wasn't like a one-day deal. But because we're essential, and if you're a bank, if you're a Lakeside Bank, and one person made it in here, one teller and one person sitting at a seat, and if somebody walked in, you were able to cash their check or whatever, if you have to have a revenue test. So if your revenue test doesn't drop by 50%, you don't get a dime. However, if you are a restaurant and you're a pizza place or whatever, and they made you close your five tables inside and yet your pizza business tripled, you get all your people paid for 6 months or a year because you were considered partially shut down, even though it didn't affect you at all in terms of money. Now, maybe you've done a little bit. So, I mean, you sit there and you read this thing and you go, if I want to come back in life, I want to come back as somebody who has somebody writing these laws with me in mind. I mean, right? It's a...
Damn right.
Anyway, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back. We'll have Mr. Carl and John and Carl can gang up on me. That's okay. I got Maddie Weber on my side, I think. SB Futures up 22. NASDAQ Futures up 69. Be right back.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Weber on the board. We have Mr. Dan Flanagan and Mr. Carl Denninger. So we get a chance to have him on Friday. Carl, do they just punt it if it's the first of the month or the first and second? What possessed them to bring these numbers out on Good Friday?
Well, if you get to the first of the month and it's Friday, then you get the report. The exception is if it's a federal holiday, which Good Friday is not. So even though it's a market holiday, it doesn't matter. Of course, they were kind enough to leave the futures open for those that want to trade that nice big spike that we got.
Yeah.
But everybody else had to wait till this morning. The it actually was a very interesting report. You know, this is the first time in quite a long time that we've seen the household survey and the establishment survey essentially identical numbers.
Why am I seeing 600,000 in the household survey, not 900?
Because you're looking in the adjusted number again, like you're not supposed to do, and that's what you did. So now the unadjusted was 971, which, you know, I mean, statistically, it's almost exactly identical to the, you know, 916 or whatever it was that was reported in the other side. I thought there was the most interesting element of this report was that people with college degrees were essentially an unch on the month, and all the gains were in people with less education. And the other thing that's interesting is that even though that we're now a year into this and everybody is supposedly reopening and all this other nonsense, that one out of five people are still not back in an office.
One out of five, meaning?
One in five. So yeah, 21% of people with the job are teleworking.
What, I was going to ask about that, because, I mean, Maddie and his lovely bride have been doing his stuff at home, and everybody that I've talked to is like moved miles away. I mean, in the middle of nowhere, thinking they're going to live in a home, and all of a sudden Google came out and said they want people back at work. They think the productivity is down a ton, and they want people back in the office. Talk about a message coming from the other outfield. I mean, is that going to be at some point people are going to, I mean, clearly the people in, well, I think clearly the people from, the Googles and the Microsofts and those people, weren't they like the pioneers of this? Nobody gets an office, everybody's in the big room, we all talk together, and that's how we get ahead. Those guys can't all of a sudden want people working at home forever.
Well, you would think not. I mean, I don't know how adaptive the model of, you know, hey, let's all get together and, you know, have the conference works when you're doing it over Zoom, okay? I just don't. It's one of those things that if you told me that this was how I was going to do, you know, my customer service and tech support stuff for MCS when I ran my internet company, I would have looked at you like you have six heads. So because there's just too much value that is there that comes just from having people in the same place and able to talk things out between each other.
Well, anybody that, I won't say that does real stuff, because I talk about attorneys, but anybody who's been doing all this Zoom stuff from, like for trials and stuff, they're like, God, it's a mess. It's horrible.
Well, I've had really a few conversations with people, interviews and things like that, but it's not like sitting in front of a, you know, I mean, even one of the things that even years ago, people call me up, they'd want me to go over to Pensacola because they had an actual uplink there where I could do a real hit for, you know, for real TV, right? And that's not the same thing as actually sitting down across the table with somebody that interviews you.
No.
The context loss is enormous, and there's nothing you can do about it. And you know, we're talking about broadcast quality stuff. Of course, you know, Zoom is not in that category at all. But I don't see how you can possibly make the argument that you're not going to lose just an enormous amount of output in terms of actual productivity from real people. And the idea that this was all just going to, you know, shift this way permanently, which a lot of people, you look at what's happened with the real estate market, things like this, I think a lot of people did believe that this was never going to go back to what it was, and yet the dislocation that's produced in the office building space, and if you could make it work, yeah, that's a lot of money to have that, you know, that very expensive $40 or $50 or $100 a square foot space downtown. But on the other hand, if you can't get the work done, it doesn't make any difference how cheap it is.
Well, I never could, just in terms of logistics, I could never, I know my stepfather knew an awful, he was a controller and a VP of finance for a lot of places, and he would tell me that in cities like Chicago, and this is going back a ways, he says the ability to have really good people work for you for not a lot of dough, because they could get on, you know, back when everything was safe, they could get on the Purple Line or whatever and be down at Sears Tower for essentially $30 a month, which it was at the time, rather than being in the suburbs, owning a car, all that kind of stuff. He says it is a dramatic advantage. to be able to get people to your place for basically next to nothing, you know. And,
when I was a wage slave in Chicago, I lived near Belmont and Sheffield, and you know the Ravenswood line was right there.
Yeah.
Okay. I had a job in an office building downtown. I didn't need a car. All I did was come out of my apartment, hop on the train downtown in 10-15 minutes.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I know when Sears moved from then Sears Tower out to where the hell did they go? What's the name of the town out there?
Hoffman Estates.
Hoffman Estates. I mean, they lost incredible amount of their people. I'm not moving out there and having to buy a car. What are you talking about? I can work down here for $20,000 a year. I sure as hell can't work out there for $20,000 a year, right?
Well, yeah. Right.
Well, what the comeback, Carl, how much of it is, use the term from business school, I mean, how much of it is a step function? I mean, we were mentioning earlier that the Conrad Hilton or the Palmer House, they're not going to hire five people a week. They're either going to reopen or not. Or McCormick Place right. is either going to have a convention or not. And we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of people. I mean, do you, and then all of a sudden everybody's kind of got to go flying with them. When do you see that picking up? Or is it going to be one state does it and everybody else feels they have to do it to compete type of thing?
Well, I think you're seeing that already. And that's one of the things that, you know, it's just an example. You know, Florida has come out with an EO that says there's going to be none of this vaccine passport BS. Okay, it's just not going to happen here. Here's an executive order. Like it or not, you try this, you're going to jail. It's unenforceable. Have a nice day. And so once that begins, and now you've had two other states that have gone and followed along with it. Once that gets some kind of attraction, and in a couple of states do it, you know, there were all the doomsayers that said when Texas dropped their mask order and, you know, a couple of other people in Mississippi, oh my gosh, everybody's going to die. And, you know, here you're sacrificing people because of political reasons and blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? It didn't happen. You go a month or 2 months down the road, the doom that was supposed to occur does not occur. And all of a sudden you've got the other states out there looking at it going, how many more jobs do we want to have leave New York and Chicago and end up in Orlando?
Well, yeah. I get this feeling, and Jan, feel free to opine in here. I get this feeling that somehow or another, the people who are running this show, it's interesting, Carly, the last couple times I was out with pretty much serious right-wingers, of course, besetting me, even though I'm not on the left anymore. The thing that you can generally find a middle ground on is say, look at the people that are running the show, both Democrats and Republicans. I don't know that it's their, you know, it's their political affiliation that you disagree with. It's just their general level of incompetence. I mean, and I even have a baseball thing. I mean, last night I'm watching the Sox game, and it's 10 o'clock, and it's the sixth inning. I mean, for God's sake, this is baseball. This isn't ultra marathon running. I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, I was listening to somebody on the news yesterday, and she runs or she's the spokesperson for all these nursing homes, and she's talking about how hard it is for people who can't socialize, can't see their family for a year, older people that their entire life was socialization. It wasn't like ours, you know. The last few years where you can hang on a computer and enjoy and entertain yourself. Their whole life was social. And the lady goes, we're 97% vaccinated, and we're looking forward over the next several months to gradually opening things up. And I'm thinking, if you're 97% vaccinated, open the freaking door. What is the matter with you? That somebody can't? I mean, why are you going to take several months to decide that the one little lady can go talk to another one? I mean, what are you going to do over those 7 months? Molt?
I mean, the problem that you have right now is that people have gotten so invested in the panic porn and the fear that they're, you know, to say, well, you know, hey, listen, I took a shot, but there's a 1% chance that it isn't going to work for me, so you got to take it.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? If you believe that it works, then STFU and sit down.
Yeah.
Because you made your decision you took the risk that something terrible was going to happen when you took it with something that was lightly tested. And let's face it, it was lightly tested. Okay, it did not go through full qualification. You decided that you wanted to do it because you thought it would make you safer. Fine. You made your decision. Now, take off that stupid diaper off your face and go back to work.
Right. I would agree. I actually do think, Carl, though, that from what I've been hearing, again, I'm debating with somebody that's probably more into this than me, but I honestly believe from what I've read that the thing, it may not be as effective as they're telling us, but I think it's safe because you're not getting the whole virus.
Well, that's the problem. It's not that you get the whole virus. It's that the error that people have made with this path and where I think we're going to end up paying for it, we're not going to like it, is the spike part of the protein is in and of itself dangerous. And when you give instructions to cells in the body to make something, you do not have control over what percentage of those cells take that instruction up and actually do the thing that you told it to do. Okay? So someone may have a moderate, you know, what they calibrated as was supposed to happen, percentage of those instructions get taken up and get replicated, and most of it's in your arm muscle, and you get protection, but it doesn't do anything bad to you. But somebody else may get a wildly higher take-up, and it may be systemic. It gets into your bloodstream, it starts replicating in your blood vessels. That spike protein is inherently dangerous. It is the reason that you get clotting when this thing goes bad and kills you as a natural infection. And so if you're one of those people, you get hammered by the shot. And it's not that you got infected with COVID, it's that you get hammered from the actual effects of the shot. And that, and I frankly, I don't think this approach is something that should be ever certified in healthy people. It never should have been done, but it has been done. People have taken the jab. If evasion occurs, then really bad things are going to happen. We don't know whether that'll occur or not. But this is, you know, this is what happens when you do something without going through the entire testing profile. You take these risks. And if you want to do that, that's on you. My answer is no, but for other people, if that's what you want to do, it's fine.
Because this is all, nothing is in a vacuum, okay?
Yeah.
They're testing this thing on kids that are 5 and 10 and 15 years old. They're gonna, you know that this is gonna be mandatory for people to go to schools next year, even though I'm gonna say very, very few kids are 10 years old got sick or died from this. And you could even make the case that they almost don't even really, give it to other people. Although almost is an odd word there. I'm sure you can find a case where somebody did pass it at age 10. But the momentum, what did, William Kennedy say about the atomic bomb? Events were in the saddle, and they drove the men hard. I mean, we've lost control of this mentally. It's on its own horse. I think.
Yeah, I think there is, but the other side of that is that there will be people who will sue. They will sue properly because an EUA drug or vaccine or device, whatever it is, cannot be compelled under federal law. And so if. Yeah, I mean, you've already had a couple of universities that have announced that, you know, hey, if you want to come onto campus next year, you're going to have this. They're going to get sued and they're going to lose. And that's just the way it's going to be. And the bigger problem is if we start to see evasion, ADE, and some of the bad stuff that can happen with this sort of a profile where you don't do the testing, if that sort of thing shows up, the retribution that is going to come from the family members of those who are left could be extraordinarily severe.
Well, they
and I hope that doesn't happen because that's the kind of thing that could literally tear our society apart. I mean, you're talking about it, you know, at that point, there's going to be, what, 150, 200 million people that have had these shots in their arm?
Well, I just, from doing the show that we do, and we all contribute, I think everybody on this show, maybe you more than most because you go on other shows as well, you know that there's a massive difference between what you say and what people hear, which unfortunately happens all the time. So that's why you have to be very careful. And I was listening to, they interviewed two people, I listened to like 100 times on News Radio 78, and they had people talking about, what do you think of Delta Airlines filling up the middle seat? And they had this one lady on there, and she was, you know, not all that happy about it. And they had this other lady on there, And she says, she could care less. She's got her mask on. She's safe. And I'm thinking, first of all, the states that had the mask laws, all kinds of people got COVID there, too. Do they think we've got this thing now where you have to wear this mask. Not only has it, you know, been maybe undersold to people who don't wear them ever, even when they have it, to oversold to people thinking they can do whatever they want with the thing on there, whether you never change it, how dirty it is. And, I mean, all I know is I wear glasses on Sunday morning, and I'm going to the store, and all I do, I put the mask on, and I'm steaming the glasses up. Well, hopefully I'm smart enough to realize that means that air is getting around the mask. Right. Do other people not pick that up? Or, I mean, it's not like this thing is 100%. I mean, I get the part that if I launch a huge sneeze in an aisle and you're 8 feet away, you're probably happier I have a mask on than if I don't. That part I get. But, I mean, the idea that this thing is, you know, it's like a space suit. I mean, are these people nuts? Especially the ones
a number of years ago I had to do some fairly nasty potential chemical exposure kind of work on my boat because there was some problems with the coring in the front, and I was going to have to do that work up in the anchor locker, which is a small confined space, and by God, I put a Tyvek suit on and took a scuba tank and a 50-foot hose and stuck the tank on the back deck, and that was my breathing air supply, because otherwise I would have gassed myself. Okay, but that's the level of protection that you actually need to have if you actually want it to be 100%. And in this case, if it wasn't 100%, I probably, you know, they would have found my dead body up in there 2 weeks later.
Well, look at the stuff that people wear when they're dealing with asbestos. That's what you have to wear.
Well, yeah, I mean, before I did internet stuff, one of the earlier incantations of what MCSNet did was we wrote software that tracked all of the different things that the brand companies use for this exposure. And down to the individual serial numbers on the masks and the hoods and stuff.
Well, going back to these numbers again, Carl, you said it was mostly people on the lower end, which have been, those are the people that get tossed the most out, so I guess that's where it's going to come back from.
It was all people on the lower end.
But if the comeback is going to be solid and good and enduring, what would you like to see? And are we sort of on it? Not on it? I mean, is it real bad? Do you think it looks like we're? I mean, is this basically good news or bad? I guess is the bottom line.
In the terms of leisure and hospitality, which is of course what got the biggest part of the pounding from the pandemic, right? I mean, it was essentially closed when this started. I would say that recovery is probably two-thirds complete. And that's, you know, that's not terrible, right? I mean,
you're talking nationwide. I mean, in Chicago, it's nowhere near that, but nationwide.
Well, I'm saying nationwide, yeah. I mean, and it is highly, you know, it is highly variable based on areas. But yeah, I would say that you could, on a national basis, about two-thirds. Now, the places that haven't come back strongly, like Chicago, is because you have a crazy SOB down in Springfield that, you know, is running around screaming with his head cut off, and maybe with good reason, because he ate himself into a blob. But I think that will come, and when does it come? It comes when the people in the city decide, hey, guess what? We're not putting up with this. We don't really care. We want to go to the pub, and we want to go now. And that's the end of the conversation at that point. And if people don't like it, that's too bad. The other thing is you've got the issue with the teachers unions and things like that up there, which is a more difficult thing because they actually do have the political power to enforce what they want. So, you know, I don't know where you get with that. My biggest concern right now is that what I'm seeing is a fairly strong spike in construction, which normally happens in the spring, right? Because, you know, it's construction season. But then I look at what's going on with lumber prices and other supplies and disruption there, and I think there is a huge problem coming, especially in the residential side, sometime in the next 3 to 6 months. And if that pipeline does not unclog and those prices don't come back in, I think it's essentially going to halt the expansion in the housing market, and that could get pretty ugly.
Well, how do you, Jan, it's kind of your area, how do you... Let's put it this way: if your population is growing, people are making families, and by the way, you're remodeling homes and you're making new homes. Everybody knows that that's really pretty good. But if you're abandoning some areas and running into another area and building new stuff and just abandoning the old stuff, I don't know how positive that is necessarily. I mean, it's hard to get a real positive, Carl, and this is my bailiwick, is if you don't have, you know, actual growth, it's really hard to cheer anybody doing well because you get the feeling they did well because somebody else is doing lousy. I mean, am I right or wrong? I mean, it's an unfair way of saying it, but it is actually the truth in a lot of ways.
I mean, I think you're right. People getting stepped on is, you know, on balance, not a positive.
Dan, you're saying
the idea of with lumber prices rising, with, you know, for astronomically, it seems to me that either, you know, it will halt, you know, real estate construction at some point, fairly soon probably, or it's kind of a bubble situation where they just pass these costs on to the niche of the buying market that has the money to pay no matter what the price is if they get the property that they're looking for. And I can kind of see that happening in my neighborhood in Chicago, where these bungalows on my block that were, you know, they were marginal houses when they were built in World War One. Really, I mean, they were very small, but now they've been, you know, they haven't changed the footprint of them. They've just scooped out the inside and put in first-class appliances, and they're going now for over $500,000. And somewhere, I know that they had to, like, pay exorbitant amounts of money to get the lumber and everything else to do all this, but there are people who are buying because these properties are selling very quickly. But that isn't your average house buyer in Chicago or any place else. So you're going to get a market that is healthy to a point at a very high end, and a market that is pretty much dead everywhere else.
Well, when you look at my significant other and I, of course, can you say you've been arguing with your significant other since the day you met? Is that possible? I guess it's possible.
If it's a healthy relationship.
Yeah, if it's a healthy relationship. I use the term squabbling. In 2007, Carl, I've been thinking about Gina's story. I get this very well written article from somebody, and where how the median house versus the median income from somebody didn't match at all. That the median house, that only 15% of the population could afford the median house.
Right.
So I was saying, hey, you know, this is a problem. I mean, did I short, you know, the big short and make a movie out of myself? No. Well, I still can't figure out how the hell exactly somebody shorted those mortgage baskets, unless you were, like, really inside. You and I couldn't have done that. You could have shorted Bear Stearns, I guess, but how would you know that they were involved? But the idea that anybody could have shorted these things is total BS, but that's another story. But the, I mean, right now, we're reaching the same spot. What I sense is, and this, a lot of this is education. This, or maybe it's, you know, maybe I'm just old or whatever, but what I learned, people who buy places, they don't even have it in their, you know, the gray matter upstairs to say, okay, I'm buying it because I can afford $2,000 a month or $2,500 or whatever it is, my wife and I. And we can afford that now, but we're planning on moving somewhere else in say 5 years, or what if one of us gets transferred? And now we may have to sell it to somebody else. And unless you've kind of been a trader, you don't realize it's not what you buy, it's who you can sell it to, right?
Correct.
It's a whole different, I mean, but that's just the trader's mentality. And I've said to some people, Audrey's friends, and I don't want to say too much because they might be her clients. I don't want to talk about my house, but I'm like, okay, you're getting a loan at 3% and the taxes are $8,000 a year. Okay, well by a third grader's admission, 5 years from now, those $8,000 taxes are going to be 11, right? I mean, there's just no way they're not going someplace. And oh, by the way, the mortgage rates will probably be $4,500. So at the exact same price you're buying it, that you're going to be paying $2,500 a month to live here, the other person's going to be paying $3,750 or four. And they look at you like you've got four heads, like you just came from planet
right.
Pluto. And I, you know, you stop the conversation because you don't want to spend all night explaining to them, but they have no idea what I'm talking about, Carl, which really, really is bothers me, because we're talking about two people with 4 year degrees in most cases.
Yeah.
And I mean, John was a professor, talks about it all the time, about it. Every year the people that entered his class knew less than the year before. I mean, what are we doing? I mean, people should, it's not about you. It's about who you're going to sell it to, unless it is your final house. You know, you're moving, you've already got the two kids and you're landing in a place and you plan, even though you're 30, you plan on dying in the joint at age 90 or 100 or 110 or whatever it is at the time. I guess in that case, you can weather pretty much any storm, right? If your time horizon's long enough.
I mean, well, that depends, because you can still get forced out. I mean, you know, right. I've pointed out a few times what happened to my mother, which is, you know, fortunately, she ran out of life before she ran out of cash. And so it, her planning was good in that regard. But what happened to their property taxes over, and that was, you know, they intentionally, that was the last house, right, for both her and my father, and my dad died first. But their property taxes nearly tripled over the time that they owned the place.
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, if she had not had the money to cover that, it wouldn't have made any difference whether or not the house was paid for or not.
But even here in Illinois, which they've done to some extent, is if you're older, you don't, the taxes don't go up, and Jen's more of an expert on this. But still,
well, they did there.
Okay, but what I'm saying, in some areas, they don't, but the minute you croak and the new person comes in, it's going
to
double
right.
for them. So, it's an interesting situation all around. And the bottom line is, if you're not growing as fast, is if everybody isn't growing, it's like nobody's growing, you know, except for a few people who manage to get their
right.
Their finger in the till. I guess at this point, Carl, should everybody be cheering these numbers? I guess it's better that it's this month than not next, but probably not so good it wasn't last month. I mean, how do you grade it?
I consider the employment report to probably be a B plus to an A minus. It's solid, but it is the dispersion is where it should be, given what, you know, given who got hammered the worst. So that's, you know, that's good news. And on an annualized basis, we're now down to a negative 4.6 million. So, I mean, you know, look at where we were. We were at negative 23, for crying out loud.
Yeah. All right, Kyle, we'll get you back on your regular schedule Friday. Jan, thank you for sharing.
Yep.
Although I think you listen more to the employment than you talk. I'm just saying, you know. That's okay. We'll talk to you later, buddy.
I'm always entertaining, Tom. I'm a glutton for entertainment.
Okay. You're saying Carl and I are entertaining? We don't know anything, but we're entertaining?
Hell yeah.
S&P futures up 23, Nasdaq futures up 64. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks, Mr. Mike Hart.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Weber on the board. We have Mr. Mike Hart with us as well. S&P futures up 23. NASDAQ futures up 67. This is obviously on this, well, it's coincidental with the jobs report on Friday, which was a breakout, 900 and some thousand people, which was more than expected. And it's also just a, you know, just a good number. I mean, as Carl said, it's a B plus A minus report. So there's no doubt about that. Dow futures up 232 over in Europe. Everybody's closed, so nothing going on over in Europe. We're in Asia. The only guys that are open are Nikkei, which is up 235. It's 0.8%. The other dudes are closed. Just as a way of last Thursday, Dow was up 171. S&P was up 46. NASDAQ was up 233. So we had a strong day last Thursday as well. Bonds today up one basis point to one 10-year rate, up 1.73, which actually means bonds are down. Bund is unchanged at minus 0.32. Japan down one penny, or one basis point, sorry, to 0.108, so call it 0.11. We've got oil down $1.45, right at 60, exactly 60. It's down 2.4%. Brent down $1.50, which is 2.3%. Natural gas down 8 cents, 255. RBOB down 4 cents, 197. We've got gold, which had a big move on Friday to the upside, down 30 cents today at 17.28. Silver up a penny, 24.96. Copper up 11 cents, 4.10. And we've got Bitcoin down 37 bucks. Very quiet today in the Bitcoin market. 57,875. Maybe we got forest traffic, weather, sports. A lot of sports. A lot of sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still very quiet, surprisingly, on the area roadways and tollways and expressways. No delays to speak of. No accidents or stalls that are causing any issues. So enjoy a nice quiet commute if you're heading in this morning, as it's been quiet all morning as far as accidents are concerned. Weather today, we have some sunshine early. We'll have some rain later on, a high of 73. Right now it is partly sunny and 63 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 96 today. Right now it's clear and 66. In sports, the Cubs won their second straight yesterday, beating the Pirates 4-3. Cubs are 2-1 on the young season. White Sox lost to the Angels 7-4. Sox dropped 3-4 in Anaheim to Joe Maddon and the Angels. Diamondbacks beat the Padres 3-1, so the Diamondbacks won one of their first three in San Diego. NBA basketball, Bulls were in action. It was a matinee yesterday for Easter Sunday, and they beat the Nets 115-107. Blackhawks were off. They're off again tonight, back in action on Tuesday. But the Coyotes played, and they topped Ducks 3-2. Lastly, the NCAA Men's National Championship game is tonight in Indianapolis. It'll be number one-seeded Gonzaga versus number one-seeded Baylor for all the marbles. That's an 8:20 Chicago time tip-off. Gonzaga, 4.5-point favorites. Chief.
Hey, kid from Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing great. How are you doing, Chief?
I'm doing good. I really enjoyed that second game. First game was kind of obvious the whole way, but it was also obvious how good Baylor is. I guess that's also part of the thing that was obvious. But UCLA, I mean, really, they lose a couple of their best guys, but which isn't to say that a couple of guys by the end of the year didn't come up and weren't as good as their best guys. I mean, there were a couple of people who just played spectacularly. And talk about no quit.
What were their ranking going into the NCAA tournament?
Well, they had to play in at the 11th.
Yeah, they were an 11 seed in the first four game against Michigan State, so they were one of the last four teams to get in the tournament.
That stat to me alone is pretty impressive, making it all the way to the Final Four.
Well, but in Michigan State, I don't know that much about UCLA. I mean, Manny knows more than me. But Michigan State, some people had them winning the Big Ten early in the year. And I saw them in a couple of early games, one against Notre Dame, and they just dominated. So I'm thinking these guys are really good.
Yeah, they really got derailed by COVID.
Well, they were 2-3 weeks out, weren't they, Manny?
Yeah, they had multiple pauses, and they were out for almost 3 weeks during one of those pauses. And that really hurt them, and they never really fully recovered, although they played pretty well the final week or two of the season when they beat Illinois, and they beat Michigan, and they beat Ohio State. They had three, like, top five wins and really started to come together, and that's how they got into the tournament in the first place, because they almost missed the tournament altogether. And they had a 14-point lead against UCLA, and then they really kind of blew that game in the second half, and UCLA stole that one in overtime and then got hot, and then UCLA just kept going.
We rarely get agreement here on Stocks and Jacks, but I'd say the one time we did get agreement is we, Betty and I both said that whoever wins that game is going to be the strongest 11th seed ever in the history of the NCAA, and that we wouldn't surprise either one of us if they won like two more games in a row.
I mean, they could have won the whole thing.
Yeah,
that's how good they were, and they did not have an easy road. Like Houston had a very easy road to the tournament where they played double digit seeds all the way until the Final Four, and then they played Baylor and got beat by 20. But they played,
right.
You know, they played a 15 seed and then an 11 seed and then a 12 seed to get to the Final Four, which is crazy. and there was a 10 seed in there as well. They had four double-digit seeds, and then they played Baylor, lose by 20. Whereas UCLA, they had to beat Michigan. They had to beat Michigan State. Then they played Gonzaga. It's like, good Lord. And they kept finding ways to win.
Now, do you see that in today's pro basketball, do you see that I keep forgetting the kid's name. The kid with the scruffy little beard that seems like he scored the last basket for UCLA. The kid never gets tired. I mean, he reminds me so much of Havlicek. I can't even, you know, it's scary. Is there a spot for him in today's NBA?
If possible, yeah. I mean, he looked like he has what it takes. When you talk about the ability to create your own shot, he absolutely had that. I'm pulling up his stats in that game. Yaquez played 40 minutes of the possible 45 because the game went to overtime, and he had 19 points on 6 of 12 shooting. And then the other guy, Juzang, who's the other guy that's sort of a 6'6 wing player that could create his own shot, he played all 45 minutes, and he had 29 points on 12 of 18 shooting.
Yeah, but he's unreal too.
They essentially had two guys all tournament long that could go get you a bucket any time, whether it was a driving to the basket, getting fouled, mid-range jumper, you know, three-pointer if they needed to, even though they weren't necessarily three-point shooters. But if you needed one, they could get you those. And then they had the little point guard, Tiger Campbell, who has the big hair, number 10. He's actually a Midwestern guy. He's from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. But he played 36 minutes and was spectacular in that game too. 17 points, and he really controlled the tempo of that game with 7 assists as well. And the combination of those three guys, they don't play anyone on the bench really except for one guy that plays significant bench minutes. They basically play six guys, and then they have one or two others that will give you just a couple of minutes.
They played tremendous defense without hacking.
Yeah, they did. And, you look at the score and they gave up 93 points to Gonzaga in overtime and you wonder, you know, did they really play tremendous defense? But Gonzaga is the best offensive team in the country.
By far.
By far. Yeah. And they held them to 36 points in the second half. And when Gonzaga averages like 90 a game and held them to 36 in the second half and really had a chance to win that game at the end of regulation and again in overtime and just came up short.
I don't know who signed me up for the Quora Digest, and it was a question from, you know, young people, old people, and the question was, I don't know if I mentioned this to you, Manny, if somebody dropped Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, and Mickey Mantle in just like a double-A minor league camp, and they just showed up in a car, would they end up making it to major leagues and being noticed? And the answer was, you have to understand, even if you're young, that the top of the gene pool were guys like that, that in any generation, they're going to be the top of the gene pool. You know, they'll obviously be in better shape now, and maybe Ruth wouldn't smoke and drink as much, but he goes, you don't have that kind of talent and not be seen by anybody. I mean, Ted Williams' eyesight would be the same today. And it's interesting. I mean, you see some of these old basketball players. I was listening to Bill Walton. We got to talk about volatility here in a second. He was talking about Pistol Pete Maravich and how good he was until he tore up his knee after 3 years in the pros. And he scored, what, he averaged 44 points a game in college. And without a three-point line and without a clock, Bill Walton said somebody with nothing better to do went back in every game that he was on TV, just in the games he was on TV, figured out where he shot the ball from, and evidently the The 3-point line started out at 19-9, Manny. Didn't it start out at like the top of the key?
Yep, that's right.
He said he would have been, they figured he would have been 52.5 points a game if there would have been a 3-point line. And Bill Walton said that he beat them when he was on Portland. He used the world's worst team that he was on at the Jazz. And he single handedly beat the Portland team. He goes, he was that good. Then he hurt his knee, and then that was it. And then talk about a medical deal. When the guy died at age 41, didn't they do an autopsy and find out he was missing a vein to his heart or something? It wasn't even there.
Is that how he died?
Yeah. Jeez. Coked up a heart attack. He was just shooting some baskets. He was age 41 in tip-top shape, and they did an autopsy. What's wrong with this guy? One of the veins or something, I think, one of the veins in the back of the heart, he didn't have one. It was like missing.
That's
right?
Amazing.
Yeah. But didn't his dad used to make him dribble, drive it in the car with outside the window of the ball, and if he lost it, he had to stop and go get it? And try
I've heard that, yeah.
It's kind of wild. But all right, we've got the VIX going down. We've got money pouring in. We've got the market going up. We got inflation that everybody's talking about, although they're not going to admit it yet, Mike. What do you mean? How much further can we go before, somebody gets us? We've got Tesla up $50 today because they kind of blew it out on deliveries, but now they didn't deliver any of. There's four models, and they stopped delivering two, the S and the other one. Or so I'm not big on Tesla cars, but they're up $50. What do you make of all this? We've got, you know, these stocks.
Right. I think right now we're still stuck in the status quo, so to speak, meaning the market's been doing one thing over and over and over again for the past year and then some, just a little bit more than a year. We've been seeing one type of reaction from the market day in, day out. Yes, we've had a few sell-offs here and there. We've had a few volatility incidents where volatility has spiked, and spiked tremendously when it does spike. But for the most part, we are in a slow decline in volatility. And I say slow because volatility has a tendency to contract very fast. And by contracting, I mean if it's really high, say, well, even what it was recently, we were up to 30, not too long ago, but long enough ago that it's surprising that we're only at 17, considering the market has rallied pretty much consistently week over week for 7 weeks since we've been at 35. And that stat in and of itself I find amazing. The fact that volatility can hang in this market and all the classic signs that we see that would cause volatility to at least go down or maybe go back below the historical average of 15.5. It just hasn't been enough, and volatility remains elevated, which tells me there is uncertainty in this economy, and that uncertainty is being represented by this volatility number. So 17.5 seems really low in volatility, relatively speaking, to the past year, but 17.5 historically is quite high.
Well, Mike, we don't normally pick a stock, but for some reason I'm doing that today because we've done it for a few of them in the last few weeks just because I have clients in some places that have them. But I'm looking here at this Lululemon, right? And whenever I think of Lululemon, I think of the pants that came out and everybody could see through, so they stopped making them, but then everybody on YouTube eBay wanted them because they wanted stuff you could see. Hey, whatever. let's not go there, but stock's up $1.93 this morning. It's trading $3.03. Now, I know they have potential of doing God knows what. Who knows? They could be a cloud company 2 years from now. I mean, so don't ever think that just because you think and you may be right, a stock is, quote, too high. If you sell it, you're going to be right, or if it's too low, you buy it, you're going to be right, at least in the short term. I mean, you may, in fact, be right at some point, but I mean, it's a tough way to trade. But I'm looking at some of these numbers, and I'm, you know, mindful of 1999 and other places. We're talking about, I guess we're talking about, again, not to disparage these people, it's a friggin' clothes company. It's a retail firm, right? I mean, we're not talking about you know, drugs with that kind of margin. We're not talking about anything like that. I mean, how do you pay? Well, I'm saying I shouldn't put it that way. The stock is trading $303. The revenue per share is $33, and their earnings per share is 90 cents a quarter. So let's call it $4 a year. So we're talking 90 times earnings, something like that. No, 75, something like that. I mean,
an enormous, whatever the number is, it's enormous. And historically speaking, this is the first time we've ever tried this experiment. I want to say 5 years ago, we were having this exact same conversation, but the numbers were much lower. You know, we were maybe talking 40 times earnings, not necessarily in Lululemon, but other underlyings like Amazon and things of that nature. You know, we're 30, 40 times earnings, and it seemed astronomically high at the time. And now we're seeing ourselves 75, 80 in many of the underlyings that we trade. And it's become commonplace. We've gotten used to that number being a legitimate number that represents growth, and it represents opportunity in the present, not so much opportunity 10 years from now. People are investing to make money in the next week, 2 weeks. Their time frame is much lower. So apparently the investing public can live with this. Otherwise, we'd see these numbers massively decline. And massively decline, I mean, in the form of a market sell-off.
Well, I mean, you're talking about, I mean, if you went to, how do I put this properly? If you look at valuations of other times, the stock could be trading 50.
Sure.
Not saying those are right or wrong, because right now the market's right. It's 303. And by the way, if you came in short, you're getting stuck where the sun don't shine. You want to be long right here, at least for a while, or you did over you did this morning. I just it is kind of crazy that the valuations that it's all about. We like it. It's going up. Somebody's going to pay more for it today. And oh, by the way, at the end of the day, there's going to be, you know, $5 billion of federal money sitting on somebody's desk that's got to be used. It just creates a. And I know it always sounds weird, Mike, when I do stupid stuff like this, where I'd say, the example I always use, talk about the example I always use is the town hometown. You know where hometown is?
No, why don't you explain?
Well, hometown is where the guy, the policeman got killed Thursday or Friday night. The first policeman has died there since 1957. Anyway, it's okay. it's just west of, Pulaski and, south of 87th Street, and it's a post-war community where all the houses were duplexes, slab houses. I'm not sure you had a garage. I think you might have a single-car garage, and everybody had, like, the same-size house, to where you really wouldn't want to live in one of these places. But the community got so tight that there was a waiting list to get back in there just because of the community, even though, well, you had to be nice to your neighbors because you couldn't hide in your house. Maybe that was it.
Right.
but by and large, it has been a tremendous success way after you would ever say, why the hell would anybody want to live in those places? I mean, it's not they're horrible. They're just nothing like, you know, they're not your 4,000-square-foot ranch that people like to become accustomed to, right? No basements, nothing. So anyway, this guy, they have a big problem on Pulaski. And the police are doing an investigation, and the guy's sitting there with his gumballs on, just blocking the street, and somebody whacks into his car and kills him while he's blocking the street. Anyway, we talk about weird. But I always use the example of if the federal government or somebody or a manna from heaven, if every morning somebody comes down and drops $10 in everybody's mailbox, over a period of time, you'll find every car going up in price over there. All of a sudden, if there is a saloon in hometown, which I don't think there is, all of a sudden the beers are going to be up a nickel, a dime, a quarter, right? You're going to see this progression just because money pours into it. Nobody knows where it's coming from, but it pours in, and all of a sudden it becomes less scarce. I mean, right now, I mean, these places are all trading as if, I don't know that Lululemon is that valuable or if the money that's chasing it is not valuable at all. I mean, I sense a tremendous difference in the value of money between the people that Maddie and I know that, say, work in our buildings and we see on the street, because Maddie and I know everybody. The guy who's working for $35,000 a year, the money is so much dearer to him than it is. Tom Brady rookie card just go for, like, was it $700,000 or something, Maddie, or some huge number the other day?
Yeah, a lot of trading cards are going for astronomical money again.
So I'd say the money is not so dear to those people. They obviously are closer to the government trough or something. Or they were long Lululemon at 40 or something. Maybe that's it. But I'm saying that you're starting to see this huge disparity between how dear money is to some people versus other people, which is what you see when inflation starts.
Right, and I think you hit the nail on the head right there. This is what you'd expect to see when inflation is picking up steam. You start seeing prices that don't make a lot of sense historically. You start seeing valuations that you have to scratch your head about and say, why would this be worth that much when 2 years ago, 4 years ago, even 6 years ago, we were talking about fractions of the prices that they're selling for. You could make the argument, and I think it'd be, given good, proper analysis, you could make the very strong case that we are dealing with inflation in this country, and the inflation is being represented by some non-traditional things, especially in the stock market. We're seeing inflation in prices, and that can be looked directly at the inflation in the books earnings and just how high we've become and how immune and thick-skinned we've become to that number ticking higher and higher. Is there a day of reckoning? Well, sure, at some point, but it seems our tolerance has gotten so high, it's hard to say where that day of reckoning will come, if come, hard to say.
Well, I've always felt, Mike, and it hasn't happened yet, so I guess I could still be right after all these years. I could still be right. The day of reckoning will come when a lot of people say, hey, Jeff, you know, you want to use my money for free for another decade? Well, now I have other places to put my money. I can put it in the bank for 2%. I'm not going to say 3.5% or something, but even 2%. You better give me something. You can't just tell me that in 10 years you're going to send me a dividend. I mean, it's...
Right.
10 years is a long time. And we've really, you know, I use the term screwed the pooch in terms of people who are used to getting something in risk-free assets. And, I mean, you talk about the idea with the 401k plans. I think it was, and, you know, kick me if I'm wrong, that if you saved up, if your dad, if Mr. Hart saved up, you know, you and him and your mom, saved up like $1 million, which everybody sounds like it's a lot of money, but if that's your entire retirement plan and you put that in the bank, that's $35,000 a year traditionally, right? And you're getting $20,000 in Social Security and your house is paid for, that you can live on that $55,000, put a new roof on once in a while, and every 5-6 years buy a new car. I mean, you provided the inflation doesn't hit there, you can live comfortably, and that was the deal that was made to everybody in this country. But now, the only way you make that money, and if you did it, if you were first, and you said, well, I'm not going to be in the bank, I'm going to throw everything in the market. If you avoided the bombs, you know, if you avoided the GMs and the Bear Stearns and those places, and stuck with or GE or GM or you know, those kinds of places, which you lost like all your dough.
Right.
If you ended up with the Lululemons and the Apples and people, that maybe would be the last place your mom and dad would invest their money would be at Lululemon or the cloud. I mean, you've done remarkably well. But you also have to realize that when you do that, you have to take your return yourself. The company's never going to give it to you. So if you're lucky enough to buy something at 50 and it's trading 300, Don't wait for the $10 dividend check in the mail. It's not coming, right? It's never going to come. So if you want to take your profit, which you have and you made a good investment on, you need to sell it at 300. It doesn't deserve the same allegiance that AT&T did, you know, 40 years ago, where they always got your dividend, you always did this. You're like,
definitely.
These guys don't deserve
it. Definitely. These are different companies nowadays. They're not the behemoths that they were. They've inflated very quickly. And I always say it's the velocity of the it's the velocity of the movement that matters the most. And I don't think there's a study representing this, but when things move up very quickly, I have found through my trading career that they have a tendency to move down just as quickly as they moved up, compared to things that have inched their way up and proven themselves through time to slowly amass wealth. Those tend to be our more blue chip companies that have proven themselves time and time again, as opposed to something like Lululemon. And hey, Lululemon might go to $10,000. I really don't know. But the fact of the matter is, the velocity of the movement has been a little too fast for me to be comfortable staying in Lululemon, especially at a relatively high implied volatility level, which simply means there's higher risk being associated with their stock compared to the rest of the market.
And I don't want to see any of those see-through pants. Just saying. Mike, thank you very much. Are you tomorrow, or is it Jeff?
It's Jeff tomorrow.
All right, buddy. We'll talk at you next week. You have a good week. S&P futures up 25. NASDAQ futures up 107. Job report was strong as hell. We'll talk more about it tomorrow.
Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Want to go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I got to get out of here. I think I'm going to lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.